Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
There are moments in life that you'll never forget. Memories you'll pass on to your children, and they'll pass on to theirs. They'll be talked about when friends come together as myth, lore, and legend. These are Tales from the Tailgate. All right, guys, welcome back. This is Steve from the Outdoor Drive Podcast, and as always, I am joined by Trev. Trev, how are you, buddy?
What's going on, Steve, man? What another great episode. Looking really forward to it. We got a good buddy of ours, Seth Hager from Arkansas, man. Wow. What's going on, buddy?
How's it going, guys?
It's rolling good, along, man.
So you killed a real good buck this year in Arkansas, of all places, man. It's not really one of the states that's kind of really talked about, huh?
Man, it's a sleeper state. I've been fortunate enough to take a couple of really, really nice deer over the last few years, and been fortunate enough to chase some absolute freaks. Unfortunately, wasn't able to capitalize on them. Might have gotten more publicity if I would have put my hands on those deer. But yeah, man, it's a sleeper state. We got a lot of bottoms. We've got a lot of agriculture. We grow deer just like Missouri, Kansas, some spots in Alabama, Kentucky. We've got a lot of areas. They're more concentrated areas. It's not, you know, every county's producing high caliber deer, but there are quite a few areas in the Delta and Central, and we do have some in the Ozarks. I've hunted Central Arkansas, South Arkansas, all up to Northwest Arkansas and the Missouri border, and been fortunate enough to find some really nice mature deer in all those areas.
Do you think it's just overlooked because of the waterfowl season down there?
Definitely overlooked, but just the tradition, the heritage, everybody, you know, traveled down South Arkansas growing up, you know, hunting big camps, a lot of pine plantations, and deer just don't grow very big on pine cones. And then, you know, as the waterfowl started to grow in the last 20 years or so, a lot of land has been locked off and landlocked, and they don't allow much deer hunting, if any at all, just because of, you know, it's in the heat of waterfowl season. So all your areas with agricultural ground and big swamps and cattail marshes, and you've got your pinch points and stuff in between, you know, large open areas that narrow down some of the river bottoms. It's kind of limited the accessibility for that. Now, we've got tons of public land. I've killed a couple really nice public land deer, and I've chased some absolute giants, and I've got buddies that continually kill really nice deer on cache, which is a National Wildlife Refuge here. It pretty much covers the whole northern half all the way down to central part of the state. It runs a long ways, and there's a couple million acres worth of it.
That's wild, man. I never thought of Arkansas as a state. When me and Steven were talking about it before the show, I was like, wow, it's Arkansas. That's crazy.
You usually think ducks, waterfowl.
Yeah, most definitely. That's what we're known for sure. And hopefully it stays a sleeper state, because there's a lot of big deer. Definitely worth the adventure, especially early season. You know, we do get a lot of flooding and stuff, so that might help or hurt some zones shut down and stuff. As far as public land goes, you know, later into the year, depending on the flooding and stuff in the Delta area. But Ozarks, like I said, there's some spots in Ozarks. I've chased deer all the way up through January, some target deer on some public land that, you know, capitalized on or didn't capitalize on,
different times of the year.
Wow, that's awesome, man. So why don't you take us through kind of, you know, a little bit. Had you been chasing this buck that you shot this season prior or in past years and then watched them grow, or was it something that you picked out in the beginning of the season?
All right. Yeah, this deer is actually something I'm new to last year. It's been going for about 10 years now, maybe a few years longer, but Arkansas, typically we open our archery season statewide around the end of September, usually it's around the 25th all the way up. It's been as late as October, you know, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, somewhere in there. And that's been going on for several years. But about 10 years ago, they started the urban program in selected cities to help with depredation system. There's a lot of vehicle accidents and a lot of, you know, crops in different places, just overpopulating deer. And so they started that. And that's opened up in a few more cities, and some of those cities are in areas that have some really good genetics, and so there's some high caliber deer to chase after if you, you know, find the right pinch points and stuff. And this piqued my interest back in college, but I never got around to it. And last year was my first year. I sent a ton of letters out and got permission on a piece of property. It was like a 6-acre lot, ended up being this lot that I killed this particular deer on, and a couple other spots. Last year I kind of overlooked this spot. It was as urban gets. The property was so small. There was only one tree that I could legally hang a stand on due to the – we got to be at least 150 feet from the center line of a county road or 150 yards from the corner of an existing building unless you had permission from that residence or building or whatever. If it was a, you know, a different piece of property, you didn't have permission for that. You'd have to be 150 yards. And I think my stand's 152 yards from a warehouse and 157 yards from the corner of a house. And I'm like maybe 100 yards off the road. So I'm completely legal, but I kind of overlooked this property just because it was gonna be trouble even hanging a stand in there. I didn't first year. I put a camera out. I let it sit for like 2 weeks. I kind of got a late start last year. Had a couple really nice deer come in through the rut. Nothing that was really consistent enough being such a small property. And last year, early on, about 1st of October, I actually had the opportunity to chase a once in a lifetime deer, ended up being a unicorn buck. I'll have to send y'all pictures.
Oh,
he
sure.
Mainframe 10 point, and he has about a 7.5, almost 8-inch third main beam coming out of the center of his nose in between his eyes. So last year I dropped everything and chased that deer and was fortunate enough to capitalize on him about mid-November, but that kind of made me overlook this property that I was able to harvest this deer on this year. Until this year, I went and pulled a camera I left all season long, and it had again a couple of really nice deer. So I decided to start with a mineral lick, found a watering hole in the corner of the property. And it didn't take about 3 weeks. I had my first card pull, and I had a bachelor group of 6 bucks in there, and three of them were really, really nice. And one of them happened to be this double drop time buck. So definitely lucky on that part to luck out and find that deer on this property, on a property that I had permission for and stuff. So after I found him, it was then just, you know, piecing the puzzle together. I only had 6 acres to deal with, but there was some Corps of Engineers, some public land relatively close. So I was able to go over there and put some cameras out just to see if he, you know, his home range was that far, and got some intel and was able to, like I said, put the pieces together, figured out where I thought he was bedding most of the time. I had a water source, which was through Onyx, the closest water source. Didn't even show up on Onyx, honestly. It was a natural spring coming out, and it just wasn't registering on the maps. But according to the maps, other than the lake itself that I'm hunting near, which is about a mile away, it was the closest water source, and it was just littered with tracks. So I put a camera over it, and I was getting them consistently, and made a little food plot. And I think my third sit, which was about the 5th day of season, had my first encounter. Came in a little too dark, didn't have enough camera light, and by the time I was able to get a shot, it was too dark to see through my peep sight. So I had to grit my teeth and sit there for about 2 hours until I knew they were long and gone, feeding underneath me. That was tough, worrying the wind and thermals and everything would change, knowing they were right underneath me. And then I think I had 2 more sits and decided to rest for a while. Gave a whole week, and my first sit back in there, I was able to capitalize that afternoon, just before dusk.
So what happened, man? Take us through that day. Like, where did it all start for you from getting in there? And
I had
coming in at a certain time, or?
Yeah, he had been fairly consistent. I felt like I maybe pushed him a little bit hunting that first week of season. So I gave it a full week and kind of let him come back in there on his own. And they were just starting to split up a little bit. They were coming in together at different times, you know, some minutes apart, some hours apart, as far as the bachelor groups go, because it was still pretty early. And we really don't typically, they don't lose their velvet here in Arkansas until about the third week of September. Some start about the second week of September. In this particular year, they, most of my bucks shed their velvet the last week of August. So we're 2 to almost 3 weeks, a little bit earlier than anticipated. So it was kind of crunch time before they split up, knowing he wasn't the most mature deer of the six. I was afraid he might push off. So I gave it a week, watched the cameras, and was able to realize he was coming in quite often in the afternoons. I think I had 7 or 8 days. He was in there within an hour of a shooting light. And the day before I decided to sit, he was in there about 45 minutes before a legal light expired. So I know I had a good chance of catching him, had good wind, food plot was looking really good. They were consistently grazing on it. And it happened to be one of the hottest days that week. So I was really hoping I could catch him coming to water, which he would cross right behind me, and got in there early, set for, you know, a couple hours. That last hour or so in early seasons, typically when you're going to see most of your movement, just because it's so hot throughout the day. And I had a couple does get up, stretch their legs. They came in and went down to the creek, came back and fed in the field for a while, and constantly looking to my north, which is there's a road kind of to my north, more my north, it'd be my northwest catty corner there. There's a road that crosses up there. They kept on looking back that way at some joggers and some different noises coming up that way. And then towards the end before they left, it was present to me that a deer had entered the field or entered the open area through there. And it was a matter of time just before I got to see what deer that was. And they eased off, and it was kind of funny. I've got a little food plot right there, and it's fairly open. There's two trees that line up just right. And I guess if a deer walked underneath the trees, it could get underneath me without seeing them. But haven't had that happen yet. And I was, glassing back where they were looking, and they ran off the opposite direction, tails up, you know, but frisky. You could tell it was a deer entering the field, and kept on looking, and a solid 15 minutes went by and nothing was popping out. And so I just thought to myself, maybe someone was walking down the road, or, you know, they saw something in that direction, because it's only about 100 yards and it's not super open, but they can, you know, they can catch movement up that way. And all of a sudden, literally had to have been within 15 yards of the base of my tree, a deer just kind of not spooks, but like just jumps. I don't know if it's a wind shift or what. Wind was blowing pretty good that afternoon. But it darts out from underneath me and stops out there about 40 yards. And I immediately knew it was a buck, but I didn't even think to figure out what deer it was, because I was so flabbergasted and trying to figure out how long has it been here? How did it get underneath me without me knowing? And, fortunately, after I kind of, you know, gathered my thoughts, I put my eyes on him and realized immediately what deer it was. He had 2 drop tines early in the season, but once he shed his velvet, he broke off one of them. But the larger of the two was very present on his left side. And so he started feeding back to me, and I, you know, situated my camera, gathered my thoughts, kind of took a moment, calmed down, made sure, you know, everything was going to be set. And he moseyed on up to 21 steps and waited for a broadside shot and was able to capitalize on the a lot of emotions and sweat and
oh yeah,
pattern and figuring out everything. And it was stressful, but it happened way earlier in the season than I figured it would. Nothing ever goes as planned. And I would say it, you know, kind of went as planned for the most part.
Man, that's awesome. So what happened after the shot? How was after your placement? What do you think?
After the shot, so he was slightly quartering to, and I tried to hug the shoulder best I could. And my Luminoc, it was in the latter part of the evening, so my Luminoc was glowing quite a bit. And it was hard to exactly tell. It looked like I hit him a little far back, but my Luminoc looked good when it zipped through. And he trotted off probably about 40, 50 yards, stopped behind a tree, and then continued on. And it didn't sound like I hit any bone. It didn't sound like super solid, like shoulder or high or anything like that. I just zipped through him. So that worried me on the sound a little bit, but in my mind, my shot place looked good through following my Luminoc. And then I gave it probably about 45 minutes before I climbed down, just because he stopped in the field and I didn't want to, you know, take the chance that he was still close to the edge or anything. So I waited till it was plenty dark, got down, arrow was coated, end up shooting a different broadhead. My first time shooting a deer with a fixed blade. I've killed dozens with mechanicals, never shot a fixed blade. And I shot a G5 Montech. Nothing against them. It's just not an entry and exit hole that I'm used to. A little bit smaller hole, so it takes a little bit longer, you know, to start picking up bleeding. Tracked for about 20 to 30 yards, found blood, immediately got out of there, called my buddy, and we gave it plenty of time. I think we ended up giving about 3 hours, just because I wasn't 100% on the shot placement, knowing he was slightly quartering too, and I hit a little further back than I was aiming for. End up being high lung on entry side, and just absolutely tore through his liver on the backside. But the blood was just not there. I hit him high, and he plugged up after about 75 yards or so. Had good blood from there. Plugged up after about 75 yards and just completely sealed up. There was just drops here and there. We trailed him for about 150 yards and decided to back out because we didn't have the light, and we could tell he was only bleeding on entry side. There was a couple spots in a muddy bank that he dug in, and there was, you know, solid blood on the left side, but nothing coming out the exit. So it was very present that he was clogged, and we didn't want to chance pushing him. So we gave it to the next morning, ended up calling a dog just in case. And dog got on the track right away, end up going all the way to a road, crossed the road. And as soon as we crossed the road, the dog lost scent. I'm not sure if it was, you know, because we were on the backside of a neighborhood or what, and there were some other dogs barking, but it completely lost scent and lost trail. And so we backed out, let the gentleman with the dog leave. Didn't want to, you know, hurt his feelings. He was pretty confident at the time that the deer would make it, judging off the amount of blood, but I knew where my shot placement was, so I knew it was a fatal shot. And we ended up grid searching another 75 yards. We lost blood, and it didn't take about 10 minutes with three buddies to get back on the trail and walk right up on him.
Wow.
So it was awesome. A bit nerve-wracking, you know. Yeah. Between long night, but I was confident, you know, with daylight we'd find more blood. And then it didn't get really nervous until we got on the track with the dog, and the deer never opened up. But we never did find a bed. He was dead while we were tracking him the night before. I mean, he was stiff as a board. He filled up. He ran about 200 yards total. Talking to some buddies of mine that have shot Montechs and shot some other fixed blades, you know, that typical that they run a little bit further if they're not bleeding out of, you know, entry and exit. They can close up and recirculate and stuff. So,
oh yeah.
It's really cool that the persistence really paid off on that one. It shows that, you know, people should definitely stay on them no matter what and keep going back and staying on them. I think that's been kind of like the theme for us lately, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's real easy to just write it off and say, well, we think the deer lived, and walk away and go hunt another deer.
Yeah, most people, judging off the, I feel like, obviously, if they'd have saw what I saw, it'd be a different opinion. But you know, the three buddies I had there, the dog handler, if I'd have had a dozen more buddies come out, just judging off of the blood alone after he sealed up, it would make you wonder that, you know, maybe it wasn't necessarily a fatal shot. Maybe it was higher than anticipated, and what they call that, you know, that, no man's land or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I believe in that or not. You know, I've witnessed, you know, deer surviving off of one punctured lung. I think
that's what I was fixing to get at, is that no man's land actually tends to be a one lung shot, not a clean, you didn't hit anything. And
and that could be, you know, broadhead malfunction, funny angle, just, you know, people need to take consideration too. You know, you can tell when a deer exhales, you know, those lungs sit lower, so you've got a huge void there that you could potentially miss if you're not careful too, you know, just by pure bad luck and pure chance. It's always better to hit them low than it is to hit them high, in my opinion.
Absolutely
valid point.
And do you think that the urban part kind of was a factor in the tracking and stuff like that to not push the deer somewhere it wasn't supposed to go? Or
yes, one of the things that was a major factor, and I just got lucky with, I didn't have to pursue in any other way, but the deer covered majority of the property I'd already had permission for, and covered a piece of property I'd access through, and ended up dying on a piece of core land. So I did not have to reach out to any landowners to pursue game. We do, we don't have a, I guess I'm not sure what it's called, pursue of game law or something like that. You do have to reach out and get permission before going on to someone else's property. So,
right.
I got lucky there, not having to, you know, jump through any extra hoops or anything. But I mostly I'd say what was a big factor as far as urban goes is just, I was able to access, got away with extra noise and stuff. And it was a major pinch point, 'cause I was between, you know, some warehouses and some neighborhoods and stuff. So I had natural funnel and, you know, actual hard borders where they're just not going to walk through or walk, you know, on the edge of a neighborhood or through a parking lot.
And do you think that scent plays a good factor also in the urban hunting, where you don't have to worry about it as much, like winds and stuff? Or
definitely need to worry about wind, but I think it buys you that extra hesitation before they bust, or that extra bit. You know, they might think, you know, you're a little bit further than you are, just because they're so used to human scent and, you know, vehicles and different things. That particular property I was hunting, I had two winds that if I hunted in those winds, even though they were not necessarily wrong or perfect, they were more of crosswinds. I think some swirls and stuff, I would have definitely gotten away with some shifts in the wind and stuff, just because there was heavy scent coming from, like I said, warehouse or the neighborhood, the closest neighborhood. Just, I mean, you're talking to roughly 100-150 yards from the edge of neighborhood into houses and stuff. So if someone was barbecuing, I could hear them talking and I could smell what they were cooking. I could tell if it was they had brisket on the grill or if they were smoking a pork shoulder.
Nice.
Which is kind of crazy, you know. It's still deer at the end of the day, so you still got to play your wind and play your thermals. There were certain days that I went in there early on and thought I could get away with some stuff, and there's no doubt that the reason why I didn't get a visual or you know, have an opportunity was because I was in there on the wrong winds, or I had settling thermals. So that's why I gave it a week after I felt like I had pressured them a bit, and I waited waited for the first good northeast wind, and that was what I killed him on. And I had two northeast winds out of the five or six sits, and both I had encounters. One was the night that he came underneath me and I was, you know, ran out of daylight. And then the second time was the time I capitalized on him.
Wow. Did you end up taping him?
I did. So the deer has incredible mass. He has short beams and short tines. That's the only thing that hurts him. He, without the broken off, drop tine, he would have been in the mid 140s, but with it broken off, he finished at 138 and an eighth.
Wow. That's awesome. A killer deer though. Great.
Oh yeah, he's got wicked character. He's just got short tines. His longest tine is the main drop tine, and it's like right at 7.5, 7.75. So his G2s, G3s, G4s on both sides are all right at 6 inches long, but they're only 6 inches long.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he had really, really good mass.
He had excuse me, he had two mass measurements. One was 7.5, and the other one was right at, I think, 8. Where he had some palmation in some different spots.
That's cool as hell. He has that little flyer off the top, like by his brow tine on the main beam. Or is that with the other drop tine, or was it?
No, he's got two kickers just off the eye guard, in between the eye guard and the G1. He's got two kickers there at the base, and then right up, he's got a flyer that's like an inch long at the very tip of his G2, but he had another flyer drop. I'm not sure what you call it. Mm-hmm. It's right there, kind of closer to the base of the G2. And that one was about 5.5, 6 inches long, but it broke off.
Is that what kind of like struck your interest with him, is because he was so unique?
Definitely. Yeah. Perfect conditions. you know, that deer could have been way, way, way bigger down the road. He was a very young deer. You could tell just by looking at his body, but in the light of things, he was, you know, crossing busy roads. And I got word that there was a couple other urban hunters in the area that were getting pictures of him and on him hard. And he was just so unique. Being in Arkansas, I've never had the opportunity to chase a drop time through the last, you know, a double drop time. So I focused everything on him. If it was going to take me until January 1st, that's the only deer I was
that was
hunt.
The deer, right? Yeah. Well, yeah. Good thing that you knocked him down and then you weren't haunting a ghost if somebody else shot him or whatever. Yeah, was, you know, like that's a tough worry. Thing.
The worry of hunting a ghost or the worry of, you know, those drop times, is he going to, you know, suck them back in and even have them next year? Is he going to throw, right, you know, just some kickers or throw it off his main beam and it go up? You know, just those drop times are kind of rare.
Or heaven forbid he got into it with another buck later down the road and broke both of them off, and then he comes in later on in the season and he don't got him. And
that would have been very hard. I'm not sure what I'd done, you know, later in the season with those circumstances. You know, chance he might make it the rest of the season, and both were missing.
It was an incredible deer, man. Congratulations on him. He's an absolute stud. Unique. When I saw it on Facebook, I was like, oh man, we got to talk to Seth because that's a cool deer.
He definitely has a lot of character. Crazy character. He got stuff going everywhere with the typical frame. And
right, I mean,
and I killed him in an area not really known for, you know, what I would consider known for, you know, really, really nice deer. Most of the deer there, you get some 140s and 50s, but they're straight typical. They're really old deer. That one there, just out of all of them, just stood out by far. Not sure what he got into, but I hope more deer get into it.
Well, I was going to say, for an Illinois deer, because, you know, there aren't any big deer down where you are, and we're not going to spread that message. So for that deer in that area, that's pretty amazing.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
Man, I
very, very fortunate, very blessed.
Really can't say enough congratulations 100 times over, because that is an incredible situation. And I'm hoping we both draw on that luck this year over here, because we're in a similar situation. So thank you for joining us, Seth. Man, it's been wonderful, and I love the story. It's an incredible deer. And everyone, I just really want to say thanks for listening along, and stay tuned for the next Tales from the Tailgate.